We live in a fast-paced and hectic world where it's easy to feel overwhelmed, stressed, and out of control. How do you manage all the competing pressures without losing sense of yourself? How do you stay focused enough to not only plot a path, but follow it? Welcome to Master Your Life, a show that offers inspiration, insight, and intelligence, as well as success stories from many walks of life that can show you how you can control your own destiny. Our knowledgeable and entertaining host and her guests give practical advice that you can use every day in the quest to master your life. Now, here's your host, Leah Mattinson.
Hi, everyone. Leah Mattinson here from Master Your Life or Recovery Road, wherever you're listening to us on this beautiful planet today. Thank you so much for joining in to this really important conversation. I want you to all take a moment to get out a paper and pen and to write this down. Because, you know, often we do these interviews and they're supposed to be, quote unquote, evergreen. And they're supposed to be able to be played forever. But that's not the case, because how health has actually really turned and transitioned in the last 2 years, so 2020, 2021, 2022, is that we're seeing things that we've never, ever seen before. And those of you who've been hanging around my podcast, Master Your Life, know I've been talking about this stuff for 7 years now, publicly, and much, much earlier on talking about taking back our health and well-being. And so this episode is going to be uncensored. So you will not find it on YouTube. You will find it on UK Health Radio and on masteryourlife.ca. I'm joined by my wonderful guest this week, Dr. Ralph LaGuardia. Dr. LaGuardia, welcome to today's show.
Thank you.
So Dr. LaGuardia has been in medicine for almost four decades. He is an integrative medicine practitioner, and he's written three books. He's written three books and researched hundreds and hundreds of hours over the lifetime of his career, really dedicated himself to health and well-being, not only in the allopathic field, but also in alternative medicine. So we're going to talk about Dr. LaGuardia's books today. We're going to talk about his perspective and what he's seen as differences in people's health and well-being in the last, over the span of his career, and what's really amplified in this last little bit of time. And starting out sort of with this new data that has come out from the data sets from the Moderna and the Pfizer and the CDC itself, which is really showing a high uptake or change in the amount of deaths in working age people that did not exist prior to 2020. And so people need to be concerned about this. And we want to talk sort of frankly about it, because we want to talk about what's created this circumstance and also what maybe you could do to restore your health. Because what I'm finding as a grandmother of six, Dr. LaGuardia, is that I listen to podcasts that tell me these things that are going wrong, but they don't offer any solutions. So it often leaves me feeling quite heartbroken for my family and friends who are just sort of opening their ears to this now about kind of how health has really not been in their own hands, and that they are really suffering with all kinds of immunity issues and issues that they never, ever had before. And so let's talk about that, because, again, I want to bring some healing hope to people who are maybe struggling with things that they would have never considered would have been a health problem prior to the last couple of years.
Yeah, well, certainly things have changed dramatically since COVID has come into our lives and ruined everyone's lives for the most part. Health-wise, we were already on a decline for the last, probably since World War II, a steady, steady decline in health, at least in the Western world. And this has come about, I believe, from use of NPK fertilizers and these chemical fertilizers and pesticides in the soils, and ultimate destruction of the microbiome in the soil, and the lack of minerals and trace elements. Therefore, if you look at some of the things, I was reading one day, it was saying that apples, an apple now, it had to eat 30 apples to get the nutrition you would get in one apple in the 1980s, not that far back. And these are all going down over and over again. All across the board, all food is less and less nutritionally adequate for us, and more depleted. And lifelong concentrations of that depletion, consequences of that depletion, are taking effect in people's lives. Then you add upon it the vaccines and the terrible environment we've been in since COVID hit, and this basic experiment on mankind's genetics, which is unprecedented. Mm-hmm. I mean, they approved these vaccines without animal testing on an emergency basis. But the reality was they had tested part of the messenger RNA vaccines earlier. And what happened was all the animals died. And so they stopped the experiments, you know, and this is unprecedented. We never had emergency approval of this. For example, the swine flu. Mm-hmm. The swine flu, we pulled it when 53 people died. So far, I believe the latest bears data, I haven't looked on it recently, it was 45,000 deaths from the COVID vaccine and a million other injuries and related problems from it, not to mention the impact on fertility and the hidden things that you alluded to earlier about cancers and solid cancers are going up in huge amounts, unprecedented number of cancers, that rare cancers that we never see, all of a sudden are becoming common. And I believe this is just, unfortunately, the tip of the iceberg.
Mm-hmm. And so I want people just to really think about that this swine flu vaccine was pulled with under 50 deaths. Like, just really to think about that, under 50. Mm-hmm. Like, that's a number of people, of clowns that you can fit in a town and country station wagon, 50.
Right.
So, and I do want people to think about it that way, because it's a very, very small number of people that died. And they stopped it. So what was different then that they stopped it and they didn't stop it this time around? Do you have any idea what's changed?
I mean, I think the political environment's changed so drastically. I mean, it's so polarized now. And we're treated as like little children. We'll tell you what to do. We'll tell you what to think. This is what you'll do. You don't question this. Don't you dare question it, you know. And they label you with all kinds of, you know, you're a conspiracy theorist. You're a racist. You're, you know, whatever. And so people are afraid and people don't mm-hmm. question it. And unfortunately, the mainstream media is not doing their job at all. They've completely folded to the establishment. They don't question anything. It's very hard to find a news source that's doing their job. They're supposed to, you know, challenge authority and say, okay, prove mm-hmm. to me. Why is this vaccine good? I mean, everything they've told us about the vaccine has been wrong. They initially said, you get this vaccine, you won't get COVID and you won't transmit. So, you know, millions of people, unfortunately, thought they were doing their civic duty and jumping on board and let me do the right thing and stop this virus, which in reality wasn't anywhere near as terrible as they told us it was.
Did they know that? Have you looked at the Pfizer data?
Yes, ridiculous. It's just the other day. Did you see that when the woman from Pfizer, I believe her name was Small, she was testifying to the European Parliament. And I believe a fellow from Holland asked her about what they did with the animal testing showed, what did they show? How did the vaccine prevent illness and transmission? And they basically admitted they had no data, none on it. You know, they just fudged the whole thing and told us it would stop it. You know, and they said, well, we were rushed because of the science. We had it, you know, and it was just the opposite. There was no science. They just rushed it through. Then on top of it, they sealed their data. I believe it was 55 years of sealing it for, before we could open it up and look at it. Why would you do that?
Yeah. Yes.
Yeah. Why on earth would you do that? There's only mm-hmm. one reason. The data is terrible. And so we're left with the consequences of this. But I'm really concerned about the long-term consequences for mankind. Never have we done a genetic experiment on hundreds of millions of people before without knowing any idea what the consequences are.
And so do you really think that they really don't know the consequences, whoever is actually hand on the wheel of this? Like, they're just, I wonder, it's like, because it's got to be fun at some level for the people who are doing this work, or satisfying at the very least, I'm trying to always think, because as a psychology person going, okay, like, what's the psychology that makes it okay to want to experiment at that level? Is it just people have got so much narcissism now that they just, you know, it's kind of that evil laugh and ha, I'm just going to try everything on everybody and let's see how it rolls? Or, you know, like what could possibly be the motive besides money? Because I think money's for sure one. But it seems like there's this crazy appetite for power that we've never seen before.
Yeah, true. I mean, you know, I think you and I are looking at it from, we're moral people. We're looking at it through our own perspective. Right. And we naturally say, I would never do that. You know, you couldn't pay me mm-hmm. enough to roll out a vaccine that I would think would hurt millions and millions of people. There's no way on earth I would approve that. It would be, you know, without blowing a whistle on it and going public on it. But apparently there are enough people who are not as moral as we are and either don't care or are willfully ignorant of it or are malevolent.
Right. And I think also that's a great question for people to ask, like, what is morality? Because that's part of what the Western culture is based on, is what are our morals and where do they come from? And I don't even know if people think about that at all. You know, so for the secular person who's kind of not ever thought about, you know, God, and not to get into a big, deep religious spirit, whatever conversation, but if you don't have any of those foundations at all, then yeah, it's okay to just look at other people as if they're, you know, bugs on a bugs in a petri dish,
right? The dirty, unwashed masses that they despise, you know. Mm-hmm. And these people certainly are in their own rarefied environment there, where they just see other people with the same opinion, I believe, and so it just reinforces what they think. You know, they're not looking for outside opinions, they're not looking at asking other scientists. I mean, reputable guys like Robert Malone are being ignored and vilified. I think his name from Texas, a cardiologist.
And there's a Nobel Prize winner who was also, I think he signed the Great Barrington Declaration. Just people were like, no, fake news.
right. I mean, Robert Malone invented the mRNA vaccine, and they vilified them, and, you know, trying to take away his medical license, and banned them everywhere. You know, you banned on YouTube, it's probably a badge of honor. Probably doing something right if you're banned. If you're not, you're doing something wrong. But I mean, it's just willful ignorance. You're looking at these people, and why are they even in a microcosm of that is my own life here locally in Connecticut. I mean, it's just, I had so much blowback against me because I spoke out against the vaccine. You know, and I was reasonable about it. I would cite my reasons. I would meet with the powers that be, and they just were all over me, shutting me down and, you know, threatening me on my license and everything else. And I said, well, why can't we have a difference of opinion?
Right.
Why can't, you know, I remember the days, I'm old enough, I remember the days when we were encouraged to debate science. We come on, that's what science is. You question it, and then the stronger argument wins. You prove through your data what's going on. They have no data. No way to verify it. Every time we look into it, they either hide the data or lie outright to us and tell us, oh, no, this is good for you. This is safe. Based on what? You know, giving it to pregnant women, giving it to young children who are at no risk. Where are the pediatricians? Why aren't these societies yelling out about this?
Right. Why aren't they? I think a young child has more of a chance of getting hit by lightning.
Way more of an adverse reaction
to COVID. So it is very frightening what people have been willing to take. Yes.
The only children that are at risk for COVID are severe asthmatics. Not a kid who's using a puffer before his soccer game. Kids are in the hospital every month. Mm-hmm. And kids with end-stage cystic fibrosis. And they die anyway. I mean, it sounds horrible, but the reality is they die. It's not COVID. You know, COVID will kill them or something else will kill them. Mm-hmm. Your average child is at no risk at all. And it's obscene. We took away several years of their education, which was already quite poor. Now have them, you know, they're missing all the social cues. Kids struggle as it is. You remember how it's terrible in some ways to be a child because you're insecure about everything. And these kids learn, you learn from your adults, you learn from facial cues, you learn the interaction with your friends. They're already isolated enough. They're on computers all the time and not interacting as we were when we were children. We played in large groups and, you know, you had millions of friends. That was the way it was. And these kids don't have that. And now they're missing that on top of the social aspect and the education. It's horrific what we did to them.
Yes. And so we have to be asking, what is it that we're going to do to correct that? And so I've really been lucky to have my grandchildren, Dr. LaGuardia, because their ages 8, 5, 3, 1, and 2 newborns.
Oh, God bless them.
So I've been right in this, like the right in the whatever, the trenches, trying to keep everyone out of getting the clot shot, you know, thinking about that being an okay thing to do. Trying to support people financially who've been, you know, told that they aren't going to work unless they go and get the jab, or threatened that way, threatened. It's been very, very difficult. You know, had to with my oldest grandson, we all have to pitch in an extra, you know, $800 a month for him to be able to go to other learning because the school did such a poor job during that time. And these are all systems, by the way, who are still getting paid.
Right.
So the doctors, the nurses, the teachers, the ambulance attendants, all these systems are still making money. In all this, people who are suffering are people who go, no, I'm not playing along, and our kids, you know, so this taking parenting very seriously and their education, because if they are not up to scratch really early on in their life, they suffer. Like if their IQ is diminished, they suffer socioeconomically. It's really important that we tend to our children's education and their socialization. And meanwhile, we've got parents who have been unemployed, threatened with no employment. So there's this constant state of stress, constant discussion about what's the next death numbers, constant discussion about your friends aren't your friends anymore because you guys didn't agree on whatever thing was going on. And so at the supper table, the supper table is destroyed, or the, you know, eating together, breaking bread together. And these things at a micro level really do matter. And it matters more than ever that we really get our collective eyes on our individual health and well-being and thinking about what it is that we're doing to be well so that we can be well for our families and make good decisions. Even up to this point, you didn't. It's like, up to this point, I've been kind of going along with everything and da-da-da. Yeah, and I think we see some examples of people who followed the narrative for a while, who are in positions of power and authority, who are now going, no, this is not the truth. This thing has been a shenanigan fest. There was a top doc from Pfizer who came out early on talking against the jabs. Dr. Malone is another, Robert Malone is another one who came out saying, no, this is not the case. A predominant psychologist here in Canada, Dr. Jordan Peterson, certainly talks about his journey through, you know, going through the jabs and, you know, kind of thinking he went and did it because he wanted people to get off his back, and then going, they're not getting off our backs, you know. So now
now we're up to, what was the fifth shot, two jabs, two boosters, now a third booster. And the argument I made from the very beginning was they were ignoring virology. I mean, basic virology that I studied in medical school, and I kind of like virology, so I'm kind of a nerd. I've read lots of books on it over the years. And it struck me immediately. I thought all viruses act the same way. Virus wants market share. Virus doesn't want to kill you. That's why MERS and SARS-2 died out so fast. It was so lethal that people became so sick, they were immediately bedridden, and then died, you know, 30% of them died shortly thereafter. So the virus didn't get a chance to spread. That's a dead end for the virus. Viruses therefore mutate to always more contagious, less lethal, because the virus doesn't want you to die. It wants you to be the ideal situation, not to know you have a virus, like cytomegalovirus that so many people have.
What's that one?
CMV. It's just a common sexually transmitted. For the most part, most sexually active adults have it and pass it on. There's a lot of viruses that we carry. In fact, when you study virology, it's very fascinating because you realize that probably, we read just different estimates, 25 to 35% of our genetics are viral. Our actual genes are viral genes that have incorporated into us over the centuries. And evolutionary speaking, it looks like that's how we actually evolve. Not so much from previously, but we go with mutations in DNA so much. Mm-hmm. And all of a sudden, a spontaneous mutation that gave you a advantage, a survival advantage of some type, and that gene is passed on. Now it appears that, yes, that may be the case in some cases, but more than likely, because of the genetic evidence, it looks like that we're incorporating viral genes into our own, and that confers to us the survival advantage that we didn't get via mutations. So it's fascinating that viruses are our friends, not our enemies for the most part. It might be the key for us evolving eventually to avoid all kinds of problems, but we just have to master it and know what's good and what's bad about them. But this notion that they keep warning us that the next COVID, you know, strain, this next variant is going to be super deadly, has been garbage from the very beginning. It's not been, not even one time has that proven right. But every time a new one comes out, they say, well, this one's more deadly, or this one's more deadly for children. You know, and it's never been the case. Right now, among my patients, COVID is rampant again. It's almost like a light cold. Very few people are hospitalized. Very few people are really even down with it. They just say, God, I feel crummy. I've got a little cough, a little headache. They take a COVID test and they call me. Yeah. Right. They want Paxlovid and I won't give it to them, of course, because it doesn't work. It only causes rebound. And I put them on my own protocol of vitamins and minerals, which works very well for them.
Beautiful. Beautiful. Yeah. And so with that, the increase in the contagion, but decrease in actual severity of symptoms, is COVID the same or different than seasonal flu?
No, same. Right now, we know beforehand, among all the seasonal respiratory viruses, coronavirus was always about 11 to 13% of the viruses any given year. So this is not new to us. A lot of it was flu and various other respiratory viruses. And flu is interesting because flu mutates. It has what's called antigenic drift. And what happens is the virus, the actual reservoir for flu is in wild birds. For COVID, it's in bats, wild bats. And so that's why you'll never wipe it out everywhere. This notion that they can wipe it out is foolhardy. But what happens is the reason why flu always comes out of Asia for the most part is because in Asia, the peasants for centuries have kept pigs with ducks. So the ducks, we can't get flu normally, avian flu from a bird. So the wild birds would contaminate the ducks and give it to the ducks. Ducks can give it to a pig. And we can get it from the pig. And so what happens is that's the way every year it comes out and it mutates that way. And the virus spontaneously mutates, very unstable. That's why you get every year the CDC goes to Asia and finds the three most predominant types of flu there and makes a trivalent vaccine for you and gives it to you that year, hoping they hit on it. Some years they don't because another one comes out of nowhere and is more, lethal or whatever. But and so that we're going to always have COVID. It's here to stay forever. Like coronavirus always was.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz, life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
And I like the idea and the practice of that terrain theory, which is you kind of adapt and you get things from the terrain. I'm a farm girl, so it's like, we had all kinds of things because we were out in nature all the time. So it's like, that's how you built your immunity, or at least that was the story. You built your immunity because you're out there, hugging up the animals and hugging trees and probably eating dirt.
that's the hugging theory.
Yes.
That's a mistake that so many mothers make. They try to protect their children from germs. I mean, it's foolhardy. It's impossible, first of all. It's foolhardy. And consequently, these kids have underdeveloped immune systems. These are the kids that have asthma, allergies, eczema, because the mother's been spraying everything, cleaning everything. Where farm kids and ghetto kids are healthier because they're rolling around the dirt on farms and there's all kinds of feces and all kinds of stuff that you're naturally supposed to be exposed to.
Right. And the term foolhardy, I love that one. I want people to think about it. It doesn't mean that you're fool means a young, innocent heart that kind of doesn't know any better. It's not that you're an idiot. It's not you're an idiot heart. It's that you really don't know any better. So it's like because you've been told, bath your kid in a bunch of hand sanitizer. I do remember prior to COVID coming along, the whole like hand sanitizers everywhere, right, and people carrying them everywhere. And I thought that just seems like completely unnatural to me.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, so, I always look back at history, nature, and evolution. You know, if we needed hand sanitizers, we would never evolve.
We'd have died a long time ago.
You know, it's crazy. And just and they're well intentioned. These are mothers who love their children. They think they're doing the right thing. It's just ironic that they're doing the worst possible thing for them.
Because what does it do using hand sanitizer on little ones?
Yeah, nothing. All it does is drop the number of pathogens they're exposed to. So consequently, their immune system never develops. Mm-hmm. I just read an interesting thing recently about facial development. They were saying that since the diets have changed, especially with young children, to soft foods and stuff, they're not chewing enough. And that chewing, it develops the actual facial features and develops less crowded mouths with broader smiles and well-positioned teeth, because it should be chewing. The mastication, the actual chewing of the foods that are tough, builds up the jaw muscles and changes the features of their face. So you see a lot of Western children with weak chins and crowded teeth and overbites and stuff, just from that and from nutritional problems with the foods. And that dates back to the 1930s when Weston Price, I'm sure you're familiar with, did all of his studies on that. He was an American dentist that went overseas. And he wondered why in his practice, I believe it was in Detroit, why the American kids had overbites and bad dentition and crowded mouths. And he traveled the world and went to all, Europe, Asia, Africa, always outlying islands and stuff, and found all these people with beautiful teeth and broad smiles and no overbites, and thought, what is going on? And then looked at the foods they were eating. Mm-hmm. And it was a Western diet that was soft, nutritionally deplete of food, of minerals, vitamins, trace elements, and especially healthy fats and fermented foods.
Right. And so what do you think would be the perfect breakfast for a mom or dad, mom and dad, who are trying to create the best health for their child? And because there's all these little ones who really, I think parents are very ill educated. You know, it's like you pop open the breakfast cereal box and you throw some milk on it and that's breakfast.
Right. Well, yeah, I mean, the chewing part more likely would come at lunch or dinner, giving them actual meats to chew and things like that. But for breakfast, I would just give them yogurt, full fat yogurt, not low fat yogurt. Full fat yogurt, and I wouldn't give them breakfast cereals and things like that. I would give them eggs. Eggs are great for you. It's a total food. It has everything you need. And people are so afraid of fats. And, as you know, fats aren't the problem. It's carbohydrates. There's essential fats and there's essential proteins. There's no essential carbohydrate, because from fat and protein, your body can make the carbohydrates that you need. And so I've been thinking about this a lot lately, because in my practice, I see so many young people with mental illness. I'm shocked by it constantly. 20 to 40 year olds who anxiety, depression, bipolar disorder, ADD. I mean, they're riddled with it, and they're all on medications, and it bothers me to no end. And the more I thought about it, I think it's a consequence of several decades of low fat diets. If parents, once again, with good intentions, were pushing these low fat diets, and without enough fat in your diet, you can't absorb fat soluble vitamins A, D, E, and K, which are essential for your health. Between that and lack of fish oils and omega-3s in their diet. So I think all of that impacted on their brain health over the years, in addition to toxins they're exposed to and estrogens and plastics and different things. But I think a lot of it was a consequence of lack of fat soluble vitamins.
And so how quickly can people turn their health around and the health of their little ones if they sort of, not sort of, but actually change their diet? If they listened and went, you know what, this makes sense to me. Is it going to take me 5 years to fix this, ill health that I have with my children? Or is it, how quickly do our bodies heal? Maybe that's a better question.
Yeah, that's a difficult question, because it all determines where you're starting from. Mm-hmm. How bad are you depleted? I mean, not everyone's depleted totally. Everyone's got, some vitamins, some minerals you want to be alive. But so it all depends on how much chronic disease they already have. Right. If your child's full of allergies already, and asthma and eczema, that's a really bad sign right off the bat. You need, I would immediately put them on, have them eat whole foods, butter, cheese, whole milk, things like that right away to get the exact fats that they need. Put olive oil on there and make them eat vegetables, make them eat, you know, meat that's pasture raised and not farm, you know, not industrially farmed meat that's raised, you know, it's eating in the food chain, eating grass out there in the sunshine. Those cows are much healthier for you because they're right. Mineral, eating organic foods. But, you know, it's hard to get kids to take supplements. So I think it's better to get them used to eating good food.
Right. And, well, and to your point about chewing and the whole jawline developing, et cetera, et cetera. In Huntington's disease, the people who follow the podcast know that we have this neurological illness in the family. For those of you who are first-time listeners, that's kind of how this show started, was, you know, how do you actually be healthy when you're dealing with something that's really a complex health issue in a generational situation? And so with the kids and learning about eating and how we actually digest food, one of the really simple things that was getting bypassed all the time was that people were drinking their calories. So it's just like, you know, make stuff in a shaker and shoot it and right. drink it. And so the problem with that, though, is that you don't actually set your body up to actually digest the food properly. So you might have actually consumed 150 calorie protein shake that had fats in it, but it hit your stomach and then just went through because you didn't actually take time to prep it. And with people who need high calorie, high fat diets in order to maintain their health and well-being from a neurological perspective, because they need the high calorie input without becoming fat, right. then that's the strategy. You have to chew. You have to have high fat foods and you have to chew. Both those right. things, or else it doesn't actually get metabolically used properly in your body. And so, yeah, with the little ones, it's the same thing. It's like if you're only ever feeding them the sugary stuff too, and mushy, they don't learn to even swallow properly.
Right.
You've got kids who are complaining about they can't swallow food, and you're looking at them like, what do you mean you can't swallow food? That's the basic, most basic function. When you came out of the womb, you could swallow right. food. Like, what has right. changed? And it starts right. very young that they yeah. complain about not being able to swallow.
Yeah. I mean, I'm always amazed. I see kids holding a bottle of Coke or, you know, walking around thinking, what do their parents think giving them that stuff? I mean, they you know, it's like breast milk and all day. They're just sucking on it. It's just thinking it's just poisoning themselves all day with empty calories and high sugar and real acidic foods that are bad for you. I mean, unfortunately, the American diet is very poor. It's lacking fermented foods completely, you know, and it's lacking, all, as I said earlier, minerals and trace elements. I mean, just the things we used to do with pregnant women. I tell them this all the time. Eat liver once a week. That was the advice of obstetricians to pregnant women in a century ago, and for a good reason. Liver is a powerhouse. It's a super dense nutrient, full of vitamin A, full of minerals, trace elements, everything you need. You know, they would have that, eat eggs and do different things. And you know, those are all things women needed. I mean, just the iodine you need during pregnancy is huge and completely ignored by mainstream medicine. Completely. It's one of the biggest travesties that we inflict on people now. You know, I had this argument constantly with docs about iodine. They think iodine is bad for you. It's going to shut down your thyroid, give you thyroid storm and stuff. So that's nonsense. I mean, in Japan, they have 23 times the intake of iodine we have. Consequently, they have no breast cancer. They have hardly any fibrocystic breasts. I mean, all cysts are all related to iodine deficiency, breasts, ovarian cysts, et cetera. In addition to which, a doctor named, I believe Jorge Fleches, his name was, an American doctor. I believe he's down in Virginia. He did some great studies on iodine in pregnancy. We've always known that iodine deficiency in pregnancy leads to microcephaly and mental retardation. But what they hadn't realized was the flip side of it was supplementing iodine during pregnancy raises the IQ 20 points on average of a child being born. Why are we universally not doing that? Every mother should be on, and I give it to them in the form of kelp. I give them kelp capsules because kelp also has all the essential amino acids in addition to the iodine. And it's easily assimilated because it's in organic form. But I mean, it's a crime not using iodine. Every cell in the body needs iodine. You need iodine for your immunity. You need it for everything. You'll never be in good health without iodine. And consequently, I mean, that was the reason why in the 1920s, they iodized salt. Because iodine, they did essentially at that time because of goiter. In the goiter belt in the Midwest, further in you get from the coast, the less iodine there is in the soil. And you're all getting goiter from the lack of iodine. So the iodized salt, but then we went to a low salt diet.
Low salt, low fat.
Right. I mean, it was all the things you need, we eliminated from the diet. You know, highly processed foods that have no nutritional value, none. Mm-hmm. People live on this stuff. They eat bags of chips all day. You see them grazing on it like fools.
Yeah, and it builds more and more desire for that food when you eat it too, because it really does know how to interact with our soothing centers in our brain. I just want to take a minute to talk about your, do you have your books with you? Because if you if you're not watching the video version, that's okay, guys, but I just wanted people to be able to see Dr. LaGuardia's books. He's got multiple. So the one he's showing right now is Infected, the Doomsday Book of Medicine.
Infected Secrets from the Medical Underground.
Secrets from the Medical Underground. So everyone make a note of that. And then
this is my first book, Doomsday Book of Medicine.
Yeah, look at the size of this book. It's
906 pages.
It's massive. It's a massive book. So
it's how to treat every medical problem from head to toe without pharmaceuticals. And I give you like 20 different choices for treating each thing, so you're not locked into something.
Perfect. And that's why I wanted to talk about these right now, because as we're talking about like kind of the minutiae of things, I want people to know that they can get these books and your wisdom and then follow up with anything that they might have been curious about as a result of the conversation. So the next book is the
Bible of Alternative Medicine.
The Bible of Alternative Medicine. And two of those books are available on Amazon. And the third book is...
All three are.
All three are. Okay, great. So people can get those, and you guys can get the links to all those in the show notes afterwards too, if you want to share any of those links to your friends and family who may be struggling with health conditions that they have no idea how they have actually got.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Nagging pain. We at Alka-Seltz know that a small amount of the patient's own bone marrow and blood cells can treat many painful conditions with regenerative orthopedic therapy. This is an attractive treatment option for painful joints, back pain, sports injuries, and many other conditions. It may avoid the need for surgery altogether. Alka-Seltz, part of a network of 50 RegenX clinics worldwide, where over 60,000 patients have been treated and helped. Alka-Seltz. Life is more beautiful with less pain.
A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
The station that makes you feel good.
And lots of times, would you agree with this, Dr. LaGuardia, that lots of times people can't self-diagnose, they just don't feel very well, and often it's because their cognition is so bad that they really can't have the executive functioning to be able to say, this doesn't feel good, and this is probably why. It's like there's so much brain fog there that there's an inability to self-diagnose, and therefore an inability really to self-manage in a healthy way. Whatever the condition is.
Yeah, in their defense, it's difficult to self-diagnose. You immediately have, it's hard to be objective about yourself. So you're in pain, you immediately go to the worst case scenario. Yep. That's why in all my books, whenever I talk about anything, I start with the anatomy. And then I explain the physiology of it. Because, I try to do it with my patients as well. You need to understand how something works before you can understand how to fix it.
Mm-hmm.
And as part of functional type of medicine that I do, I also find out what each organ needs and give it the nutrients it needs. For example, the thyroid. Your thyroid cannot function just without iodine, for sure. So what happens is that due to fire retardants, and they use it instead of iodine and bacon, they're using bromine and bromides. And that's a halogen, just like iodine in the periodic table is right next to it. So it functions like iodine, except it doesn't work in the body. the body needs iodine, has no need for bromine at all. And so a lot of the thyroid hormone, doctors are measuring thyroid hormone in patients, measuring T4 only, usually they just do TSH, thyroid stimulating hormone. And they're not, if they measure T4, they're getting empty T4, it doesn't have iodine with it. So that's key. So with all my patients, for example, who are hypothyroid, I put them on kelp and selenium. Selenium to help convert the T4 to T3, the active form that you need. Otherwise, it doesn't work. And they do much better. I put them on Nature's Thyroid or Armathyroid rather than synthetic thyroid. And that works very well for them. So that's what you have to do. You have to find what each organ system needs, what nutrients it needs, and then give the body back first. And so many times it clears up the illness because the body can now function normally.
And I'm struck too by the, it's like in, I'm a Qigong teacher. And so in traditional Chinese medicine, we talk about how the body functions and how things are connected to one another. And when we're talking about different body systems or organs in Chinese medicine, we talk about the hands and how they actually connect to our heart and to love and to appreciation and those things. So all of the foods that we stick in our hands and that we feed ourselves are just like when you applaud somebody that's awesome or applaud something that's really great, you're sending a signal that you actually really like that thing. And so when you feed yourselves foods that aren't good for you, you're also accepting those things as part of your nature, that you want that thing to love you back and it doesn't. You know, so when you start replacing those foods that are not helping you with the supplements that are helping you, you'll notice that it's easier to take them. You know, so some people will say, man, I can't take fish oil. I hate the taste of kelp. I hate the taste of spirulina or, right? It's like, oh, it tastes like a bale. Yes. When you first start taking it, because it's such a big difference from what you have been taking. And we've really groomed our palates to be nothing but like very, very sweet, you know, so lots and lots of the sweet thing. And we don't even really, so we don't understand these connections between what we've been holding in our hands and putting in our mouth until we sort of start to dissect that a little bit more and go, why is it I'm so in love with this food that really is making me feel like crap every time I eat it? Or every time my child ingests this thing, why do I continue to give it to them when I can really tell they don't feel good afterwards? You know, they complain about an upset tummy or they've got these allergies or they've got skin conditions, you know, and that has become like we're supposed to accept that that's normal.
Right.
So these milestones are how we look at health, you know, is that the sicker, it's like we've accepted being sicker and slower
and obese.
And obese. Yeah. Oh, yes. Right. Obese for sure. So in the aftermath of this last couple of years, what are the things that you're seeing anecdotally that have increased in your office? Because I know we're seeing data coming out of, you know, some of the CDC stuff, et cetera, that's saying there's certain conditions, you know, so what are those conditions or what are
things? Well, the most striking one by far is SADS. Sudden adult death syndrome. Yes. And that's a new syndrome. We never had that. We had SIDS, sudden infant death. We never had sudden adult death syndrome. And what was really, you know, was shocking to me was the Life Insurance Companies of America came out and said that there was a 40% rise last year in unexplained deaths in adults. 40% rise. As they described it themselves, a 10% rise would be what's called a black swan event. You know, swans are white every 200 years, there's a black one born. You know, and they said that would be a 1 in 200 year event. Now they have four times that. And these are companies that survive based on a very thin margin of figuring out their actuarials, how long you're going to live. And they're pretty good at it. You know, that's how they base their whole business on, predicting that. And they're losing billions of dollars because of this. Yet they have the blinders on. They actually said in their report, we're not sure why, which is beyond disappointing. I thought, come on, guys, man, what's changed? Only one thing has changed. You know, people have been vaccinated. I mean, is that afraid to even broach the subject? Look at world-class athletes. Between 1969 and 2020, I believe 1,184 of them died playing sports, roughly 50 years. 2021, 794 died. And I think this year we're up to 1,200 already that have died.
Right. Yeah, and those are real stories that people can find anywhere on Google. So it's not hidden. It's not conspiracy theory. And they're dropping dead. So it's not like they've had long, you know, whatever, long serious illnesses. These are healthy, uber healthy athletes. Young.
World class athletes. Couldn't be
world class. Yes.
They're doing everything right, and they're dropping like flies. Mm-hmm. And, military, losing a lot of men in the military, the same thing, myocarditis. Even mm-hmm. Israel, they went whole in on the Pfizer vaccine, and they're seeing huge amounts of, they just came out recently and said in the 18 to 39-year-olds, it was a 40% rise in cardiac events. And then Florida just came out with a report. The Attorney General of Florida came out and said the same thing. There was 84% rise in 18 to 49-year-olds in cardiac-related problems. You know, it's unbelievable. Yeah, and, of course, they took them off of Google, for Facebook. And they said it,
So if the 80% rise was, so they're saying there's an 80% rise. Let's say it was one person that actually had died in that age group prior, because they're not giving that number. So I'm just playing with you. But if it was one and there was an 80% rise, that would be 80 people dead. That would still be 30 more than when the stuff got shut down with the swine flu. So I'm just, they're not actually saying it's 100 people and there's an 80% rise. So if people want to dive into the statistics themselves, like really do think about, does it mean that, 5 million people are more people are dead, or does it mean 50 people more are dead? Because that's kind of how the stats got skewed on the general public when this whole thing started, is because the extrapolation of this big, massive, wiping out the planet with the numbers of the virus, and that never came true. But that's because data and stats were fleshed out incorrectly to make it the worst case scenario possible. And it wasn't something that was accepted by the scientific community, even the way that these numbers were come up with. So do your research though, guys, because it's kind of interesting to see, is it 800 people that are dying of this, or is it 8,000, or is it 800,000? And if you've got anyone in your family that was vaccinated that's in that group, should you be looking and seeing what you can do to help them to restore their health? Because that's what you would do if you're responsible for your family, is you kind of go, got new information. Things aren't looking that great. what can I do to help?
In my own practice, I have 9 people so far who died within 3 months of being vaccinated. All previously, one had high blood pressure, but all previously healthy men, you would not expect it. One dies, it's a one-off, then okay. But, time after time, we're seeing it. And then relatives of patients, they'll say, my brother-in-law died. He was in great health. He was a runner. He was a health food freak. And I said, was he vaccinated? They go, like a month ago. They just don't make the connection, people. But I also have seen a huge rise in Bell's palsy, pulmonary emboli, DVTs, cardiomyopathy, and unfortunately, cancers. My wife recently went down for a mammogram, and the radiology tech said to her, are you vaccinated? And she said, no. And she said, good. She goes, we keep seeing more and more people coming in vaccinated. She kind of whispered it to my wife.
Right.
looking over her shoulder. My God, if they hear me, I'm done. But, and I think, it'll come to a point where they can't ignore it. Mm-hmm. My belief is that the spike protein that the vaccine is producing in our bodies is causing clots on a capillary level. And so what happened was I started measuring D-dimers, which measure clotting in patients who are vaccinated, just out of curiosity. And I had a 63% positive rate of D-dimer in there, which is huge. And I called up the head of medicine. I called up, they brought them in from Hartford Healthcare. We had a huge meeting, and they just shut me down. Said, "Oh no, it's you're measuring something wrong. It's something you're doing." Blah blah blah. It was all my fault. And so I said, "But aren't you concerned about this?" And of course they had the blinders on. No, it's safe. All the data. I said, "There is no data. You keep saying all the data. What says that? What data? There is no data. You're just telling me, it's just the powers that be telling us, take it, stupid, shut up. It's safe.
Right.
Get another booster. No, you need another one.
Right.
It's,
And you need to, it's like people need to see it to believe it too, which I think is Bell's palsy is an interesting one because that one started early on. So for people who have had those kind of, let's say symptoms or after symptoms, then definitely come over to the website and check out the terahertz technology that's there from iTeraCare Therapy. And you can see the before and afters of people who've actually recovered from their Bell's palsy, because I do want to give people hope that you can recover from some of these things. Because I think that's my, again, my heartbreak about listening to a lot of the podcasts that are coming out with all this information is there's not really any, like, how do you recover from this? If you did take it, if your family took it, then how do you recover? What are the things that you can do and do relatively quickly and be able to execute them yourself quickly also, you know? So getting a book, reading a book, implementing some things, really important to take your power back. Empower yourself.
I mean, the first thing you have to do is stop getting any more boosters.
Right.
That's first. And people are, most of my practice is heavily vaccinated, even though I'm totally against it, because they did it on their own. They just ran out and got vaccinated. You know, I was saying to them, no, you don't need this. Don't worry. So, you know, you're not at risk. You know, everyone else, and a lot of them, in their defense, they had to do it for work. They didn't lose their jobs if they wanted to do it. But, you know, it's a huge opportunity, I think, for trial lawyers to do something good. Sue these companies who force workers to get vaccinated with no data. Sue them. If you're having a stroke or a heart attack or, cancer you develop afterwards, not to mention the spike in autoimmune disease. I mean, you get vaccinated, you have underlying Hashimoto's or lupus, it's going to go crazy, which it did in all these patients. I see them all of a sudden just doing spiraling downward, not to mention brain fog, severe chronic fatigue. You know, it's very difficult. Is it long haul COVID? Who knows? You know, and there's no test for it. You know, and we try to, but I think what you were saying before, you asked me, and I didn't answer it, was what do we do for these people who are vaccinated besides telling them, oh man, you screwed up?
Which isn't helpful, by the way.
Right. It isn't helpful at all.
It's not helpful at all.
Right. It's satisfying at a certain level, but it's not helping them. And so what I would do immediately is, I have in my book, I describe the Gang of Seven. It's the things that I use to boost the immune system. And that includes vitamins A, C, and D. I mean, all respiratory viruses are susceptible to those three. Well, I haven't had a flu shot in 30 years. I keep my vitamin D levels high. And I'm exposed to flu all day, every day. As soon as it comes to town, primary care. I mean, in my office every day, people are like, Doc, how come you're never sick? I said, well, what have I been telling you? I mean, everyone's vitamin D levels are low. It's almost universal. The rare person who's got a decent vitamin D level.
Right.
And the irony is that the darker skinned you are, that naturally that blocks it, but also the lighter you are, the lower your vitamin D because they're wearing sunblock. They're lathering themselves with sunblock, never getting exposed to it. So anyway, so I have to do vitamins A, C, and D, zinc, iodine, selenium, and quercetin.
Beautiful. So everyone's got their RX for today. Go out and take care of your own health and well-being. Dr. LaGuardia, thank you so much for being a wonderful guest. We're out of time for today.
Okay. My pleasure.
I'd love to have you back on again to share your wisdom if you're game.
I'm game. Anytime you want. I really enjoy it.
Awesome. Awesome. Everyone, thank you so much for tuning in and sharing this episode with your friends and family. We love you guys and want everyone to be well. So love yourselves. Love each other. Mind your minds. That's all for us. Bye for now.
Thank you for being a part of our program today. Master Your Life is a presentation of Leah Mattinson Enterprises, Inc. Join us next time on Master Your Life, helping you to discover the very best of you.